This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. North Carolina law forbids people of the same sex from marrying one another. It refuses to acknowledge same-sex unions performed in other states. But some Republican members of the General Assembly want to strengthen this prohibition. Lawmakers aim to give voters the chance to add an amendment to the state's constitution that would outlaw gay marriage. Legislators would consider a gay marriage amendment and several other changes to the state constitution when they return to Raleigh in September. Joining me to talk about the constitutional amendments is Mark Binker. He is Capitol reporter for the Greensboro News and Record. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us about the gay marriage amendment now that's under consideration.
Well, as you said, since 1996, there's been a law in the book that forbids people of the same sex from getting married. The fear on the behalf of proponents who want to see a constitutional amendment is that laws can be struck down by the courts. They're worried that some couple who gets married in another state where it's legal would come back here and sort of sue to have their marriage recognized, and that you could have a judge say, you know what, they're right under state law. So what they want to do is add this prohibition to the North Carolina Constitution, and it is expected to be one of probably somewhere between 3 and 6 amendments that get serious consideration during a special session to begin September 12th.
And what does it take to get a constitution, the Constitution amended?
First thing that has to happen is supermajorities of both the House and the Senate have to vote for it to put it on the ballot. And then it would be on the ballot at some point in time in the future for voters to decide on. And part of sort of the politics and maneuvering around this is people consider this kind of constitutional amendment one that will draw out certain voting bases. There's a certain strategy aspect to it here that if you put it on in the fall of 2012, for example, you'll ensure turnout among conservatives and evangelicals who will also vote for other things like Republican candidate for president. Mm-hmm. So
that might be one. I mean, the other side is that you can also energize the other base,
you
right?
You could.
And that was the base that was absent in the last election. So isn't there a risk on the part of, say, conservatives who see this as perhaps a boost for their election prospects in November that they might just energize an otherwise sleepy base?
Any time you put anything on the ballot, there's a risk-reward calculation. And the question that people pushing this amendment for political reasons, leaving aside the philosophy behind it, but for political reasons, are you really going to lose the voters who are going to vote for this constitutional amendment? It's not like people who feel passionately about the gay marriage amendment are going to go and vote for Barack Obama for president, for example. They're likely to be fiscally conservative, socially conservative on other issues in North Carolina. That generally means voting Republican. On the other hand, as you said, you could get backlash the other way. You could also put some Republican members and of the General Assembly in difficult positions. You have some Republicans who are from suburban House districts. You have some folks who are sort of came along in the Tea Party push and are really more libertarian than they are Republican. And this amendment may not be a slam dunk vote for those kind of folks.
Do the Republicans have the supermajority they need in both houses?
We got an interesting little test of this during the July special session that just finished that was mainly focused on redistricting and dealing with overrides of gubernatorial vetoes. There was a day when they thought that they were going to maybe try to get this amendment done during that session. There was some thinking, hey, we have the numbers now. Let's just go ahead and do it and push it through. And what was found, I think, pretty quickly was, yeah, we have a majority, but we don't have the supermajority we need. The firm votes aren't there. Let's step back a bit and hold it off until September and kind of do what we said we were going to do.
Now, do opponents of the gay marriage amendment find comfort in this inability to get that supermajority?
No. I I think they're still looking at the numbers in the General Assembly, still think that a lot of pressure can be brought to bear by proponents of it. I think they're still taking this fight very seriously. You saw them gear up for action during the July special session. There's no doubt in my mind they'll be sort of fighting equally hard during the September special session. This is one of those ones that it's a close one. It's one where opinions and swaying one or two minds can matter. So that tends to be the hardest fought type of battle down at the General Assembly.
And when would this be on the ballot?
That's up to the General Assembly, who writes the legislation. They can choose pretty much any future ballot that they have the time to put it on. For example, they could put it on 2014 if they really wanted to. Part of the negotiation here is with conservative Democrats who say, look, philosophically, we're with you. We'd love to add this prohibition to the ballot, but gosh, this doesn't do our party any good if you put it on November 2012. Why not put it on the May primary in 2012 and then we can back you up? Well, if you're viewing this from a political aspect and you think that's going to do you some good in November 2012, you don't want to make that compromise.
But the compromise might be necessary to win the majority that you need. So yeah, that could be the politicking going on behind the scenes. Then, and maybe you said this, but after – if it does win the popular vote, then what's the next step?
It gets added to the state constitution. There's usually some lag time so that you're not throwing – sort of a wrench in the machines of lawmaking right away. But basically, if it wins the popular vote, it becomes part of the state constitution, and it's there until repealed by the voters or struck down by some federal court.
Does the governor get to weigh in on this?
No. Governor's veto does not apply to constitutional amendments or redistricting.
Has there been a legal challenge to North Carolina's law?
Not that I know of. And this is one of the arguments for the people who say we don't need an amendment. They'll say, look, we have a state law. It's not been challenged. We don't have a terribly activist judiciary here. Doing this type of amendment really is unnecessary. That is one set of arguments against doing it.
And you talked about, again, getting back to the politics, that libertarian streak among conservatives who say, yeah, we may be there philosophically, but honestly, tampering with the Constitution, telling other people how they live, that's not what we're about.
Yeah. You have several members of the General Assembly who were sent there to take care of taxes and budget and things like that. They're fiscal conservatives. But, you know, when it comes to personal behavior, they're libertarians and basically, you know, follow the line that government ought to stay out of people's personal lives.
As a reporter for the Triad's largest paper, the Greensboro News and Record, you cover the only openly gay state lawmaker in North Carolina. Tell us about Representative Marcus Brandon. He's a freshman from High Point, right?
He is. Elected last election. Very, very interesting guy. In fact, a lot of us, including myself, didn't know that he was gay until fairly late in that election when he got an endorsement from a national gay and lesbian rights group. And, you know, sort of the conversation later that day was, Marcus, is this accurate? It just never came up. It wasn't something that he was running on. It's actually something that he tries – he does not want to be known as, you know, sort of the gay legislature or whatnot. Mm-hmm. He has lots of other interests. That said, you know, he doesn't shy away from it when asked, but it's just not sort of the most out front aspect of his personality.
Will he become out front in this battle?
He has been. He did when there was a big sort of rally on behalf of the amendment outside the legislative building earlier this year. He was inside doing a news conference with clergy, basically said, look, you know, this is not about me personally, but about, you know, the rights of citizens and sort of taking religion and you know, foisting it upon other people. And in July, when sort of rumors came up that this was possibly going to be heard during the July session, you know, he was making the rounds in the building kind of quietly talking to some of his colleagues trying to win their hearts and minds. So, yes, he'll be involved in it.
How unusual is it to amend the state constitution? When was the last time it happened?
It's not terribly unusual. It's not like the U.S. Constitution, which is just almost impossibly hard to amend anymore. The last big amendment that most people probably would remember would be something that was called Amendment 1 at the time. It had to do with tax increment financing. You know, there was a big campaign on behalf of it and also a big campaign push against it. So it's not hugely unusual. And a lot of the amendments tend to be kind of technical things, things that you'd see on the ballot and go, eh.
This one certainly will have a lot of political interest around it. Now, what are some of the other amendments that the legislature might take up in September?
A lot of them have to do with keeping the future legislators from doing things. For example, there's one proposed that would deal with eminent domain, keeping sort of cities and counties from taking property for something other than a public purpose. And that's based on or kind of aimed at the Kelo decision out of New England, where a town took property and then turned it over to a private developer. There's another amendment floating around out there that would restrict the number of terms that the House Speaker and the President Pro Tem of the Senate could serve, sort of aimed at restricting kind of people amassing too much power. There's a Tabor Amendment, what they call the Taxpayer Bill of Rights Amendment, that would restrict the growth of government to some calculation of inflation and population growth. That's one that fiscal conservatives like because it sort of limits the growth of government and ergo limits the growth of taxes. So really this types of kind of restrictor plate amendments, I like to call them, on government are the bulk of kind of what's out there right now.
Mark, thanks so much for talking with us.
No problem.
Mark Binker is Capitol reporter for the Greensboro News and Record. You can read his Capitol Beat blog online at news-record.com. Just ahead, the North Carolina Literary Review celebrates its 20th anniversary. You'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.